It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in for another edition of the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com to find links to some of the stories that we're talking about today. And it is a fast and furious moving flood of news in the Battleground States with, I guess, Virginia being the centerpiece during the course of the week, and then moving to everything from Amazon CEO, Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos sexting pictures of his junk. And we're not, by the way, when we're talking about him sexting pictures of his junk, we're not talking about like the backyard at Sanford and Sons. We're talking about more the sexual sexting to his mistress that apparently the mistress's brother sold to the National Enquirer, who then threatened Bezos if they didn't back off at the Washington Post with stories about the National Enquirer, that they would publish their story about his junk. One of the headlines about Bezos, of course, blaming Donald Trump, because everything these days is always Donald Trump's fault. One of the headlines I saw said Bezos blames Trump for junk pics, and it's like, why did he send pictures of his junk to Donald Trump in the first place? But apparently he's just, you know, from an indirect purpose, blaming Trump because the National Enquirer is seen as a Trump ally. And apparently the brother of the mistress who reportedly, according to Bezos' investigators, stole the pictures and provided them to the Enquirer, he's a Trump fan. So everything always comes down to it's always Donald Trump's fault.
Now, just to set the stage here, why do we call this the Battleground State Report? And why do we focus on the news of the battleground states? Basically, as Tip O'Neill, former Democrat Speaker of the House during the Reagan era and the Jimmy Carter era, famously said once, all politics is local. And so when we look at the 2020 presidential election, we know that 20 states are going to vote for Donald Trump. They you can count them up right now. Their electoral college votes. And we also know that 13 states are going to vote for the blue candidate, whoever it is, be it, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Francis Beto O'Rourke. But then there's seven.
Elizabeth, I'm a Native American, whether I am or not, Warren, after I get my beer.
And then in the 17 states that are kind of up for grabs at various degrees, what happens in those states at the local level will really determine, in addition to the national news, will determine whether they go blue or whether they go red in 2020. And just to remind everybody, those states in the Midwest are Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, and Minnesota. In the South, it's Virginia. Everybody's laughing because they know what's coming on Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. In New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. And then in the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. So I mentioned Virginia. We had, for a long time, seen Virginia, which had been red, solid red Republican in the 1970s and really up to 2000. It has not gone for a Republican presidential candidate since 2004, hasn't elected a Republican to the United States Senate since 2002, hasn't elected a Republican governor since 2009. There's some craziness going on in Virginia. We thought Virginia was solidly blue. It's battleground state, but very much leaning blue, the bluest of our 17 battleground states, until things happened this past
week. Just in the last week. And we're going to talk a lot about Virginia today, because what's going on in Virginia is not just bizarre and interesting from the bizarre standpoint, but it does have a huge impact on whether or not Republicans have a chance to not only make gains this year, they have off-year elections. You'll have Mississippi, Kentucky, New Jersey, and Virginia having elections this year with their legislatures and their governor's races and things. But Virginia this year will have a battle over the state house and the state senate. Right now in Virginia, the Republicans control the state house in Virginia by one vote, a margin of one legislator. And that margin came after the 2017 election, when there was literally a coin flip or draw a name out of the hat, because you had a race literally come down to a dead tie. Not just that it was within the margin of error, but literally a dead tie. And the way it was resolved is by chance. And Republicans, by chance, ended up keeping or gaining that one last seat that gave Republicans a majority in the House, gave Republicans a Republican Speaker of the House. And then on the Senate side, Republicans have a two-seat majority in the state Senate. The Democrats in 2017 picked up a net gain of about 15 seats in the Virginia legislature, which closed that margin to where the coin flip made the difference of whether or not Republicans retained the House, based literally by the luck of the draw in that particular instance. As you put the backdrop of this scandal and chaos the last week, that legislative battle at the state House and state Senate level is going to have an impact in 2020 on how that bluish-purple state cast their votes in a presidential election. And just in the last week, you've not only had the issue of partial birth up till the moment of birth, and even in the words of the Democrat Governor Northam, after birth abortions, infanticide, that had mobilized and energized a Christian, a conservative, a pro-life base in Virginia. And then from there, oh, man, all hell broke loose.
Doug Kellett, does this make your head explode?
It does. It's hard keeping up with it, right? I think I've come up with the answer, though. The person who does the best Michael Jackson moonwalk ought to be the one that gets a hold onto the governor's seat, I think.
Do they have to wear brown makeup, though? That's the real issue. Or attend parties with a friend dressed as a Klan member. We'll break down what's going on in Virginia and why it matters in a presidential race. When we come back for more of the Battleground State News, Battleground State Report, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, and we'll be right back.
The Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in. I'm Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett here with us as well for the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com to find links to some of the stories that we are talking about today, and we keep you up to date throughout the course of the week between shows. It was just kind of a quick Cliff Notes synopsis, as quick as we can do it. What's happened in Virginia after the debacle of a tortured push for partial birth abortion up till the moment of birth, and with the governor, Democrat governor, actually advocating for allowing birthed children to be kept comfortable while the decision was made whether to execute them or not, created a major controversy that took on some national level of attention. You had the state of New York doing the same thing, Rhode Island, other states following suit with this. We're going to push abortion to the very moment of birth and allow kind of an unfettered, as long as you claim some sort of a health basis that a woman can claim. And most medical doctors will tell you there's absolutely no legitimate basis to terminate a pregnancy for the, quote, health or life of the mother in that last trimester, when you can either have the child born, you can have a cesarean section and have the child born despite whatever health complications the mother may be fearing. There is no justification for the murder of these unborn babies at that stage of the game, and yet this is sort of the radical agenda that the left has subscribed. And we're going to talk more about the impact on those pro-life voters in places, Catholic voters, evangelical voters, like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those battleground states, and the impact there. We'll talk about the implications of this whole pro-life push. You saw the president in his State of the Union embrace a pro-life agenda. You saw the president in his speech to a prayer breakfast this week embrace that agenda, and that is not a mistake. He understands what's going to move voters in those battleground states, and they're playing to that. Well, on top of that controversy, you then had this Democrat Governor Northam, who is in Virginia. You have one term and you're done. You don't have the ability to run for re-election. So he was one and done, but he's only a year into his term of office. A school yearbook from his medical school time depicted a picture of him and another person standing side by side, one in blackface, one in a Klan robe that he admitted was him. was so shocked when he saw it. He said, oh, yeah, I apologize. I should never have done that. And then 24 hours later said, oh, wait, I take that back. No take backs, no Indian giving. he takes it back. Nope, that's not me in the picture.
Me.
But by the way, I did put blackface on and do the moonwalk and compete in a contest in San Antonio, Texas. So I did bad things, and I apologize for that, but I'm not resigning. Now, there were immediate cries for his resignation from Democrat politicians. I think virtually every candidate for president
including
on the Democrat side.
Attorney General, the Democratic Attorney General, Mark Herring in Virginia, called for the governor to resign because of that blackface picture on his yearbook.
So intolerable that the statewide elected attorney general, who was already announcing that he was running for governor in 2021, the next time the governor's office comes up, that he was going to do this. The lieutenant governor, an African-American, who is also said he's running for governor in 2021, so he and Herring, the attorney general, would be facing off against each other. He backed away from Northam, and then all of a sudden, a sex scandal involving the lieutenant governor popped, and the lieutenant governor started blaming Northam, which created a further divide between the black lieutenant governor and the white Democrat governor. They're all Democrats. And then the lieutenant governor's turned his attention to the mayor of Richmond, an African-American, who's also talked about running for governor. And, Justin Fairfax, the black lieutenant governor, recognizing that if a black mayor of Richmond gets into a race and they divide up the black vote in the Democratic primary, that just hands the gubernatorial primary to the white Attorney General Mark Herring. I know this gets very complicated.
My head is exploding.
But they're all kind of maneuvering for power in this debacle, and yet more comes forth, because then Mark Herring, the lieutenant governor, who has called for the governor to resign, or the attorney general, who's called for the governor to resign over this
blackface picture,
admits, oh, and by the way, I put brown makeup on, and the media trying to cover up for him referred to it as brown makeup, not blackface. I put brown makeup on and went to a party in college as a rapper, and now we're seeing pictures from these college yearbooks where the governor and the attorney general may not have appeared in full blackface, kind of minstrel blackface. But, man, apparently everybody else in their colleges were doing the same thing. And then again, you've got the lieutenant governor with a sex scandal. A woman has come forth and said that he sexually assaulted and essentially, if you believe her story, raped her at the Democratic convention in 2004 in Boston. The only one facing anything that's potentially criminal is the lieutenant governor.
Right, that would be criminal.
The National Organization for Women and others are demanding his resignation. His response in attacking the victim, who's very credible, a Democrat,
not a
college professor, tells a very credible story. He admits that they had an engagement of an intimate nature, but he claims it was consensual. She says, not on your life. She's actually retained the law firm that represented Dr. Blasey Ford in her allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. So it's a tortured mess. And we're going to talk more during the course of the show on how does it play at the ballot box. But have I pretty much summed it up, Doug?
Well, I just joined in. Is this a series on Netflix? I'm in. I want to check it out. I did hear that
I told somebody the other day that what you've got going on in Virginia, we're just two dragons and a dwarf from being full-on, you know, Game of Thrones.
Right. I think you're already into season two. I heard one of the best lines I heard is, after all of this, and you just went through every bit of the scandals, plural, that are going on there, that the state of West Virginia wants to get Virginia name and now be renamed Eastern Kentucky. It's that bad, I think, up there.
It is pretty bad, Doug. And it you sit and you just listen to Steve do the synopsis of what's happened in the past week. You just can't believe it.
Right, because it wasn't even on our radar, right? The governor made this famous we'll decide whether the baby can live outside the womb on his interview with WTOP. I mean, we weren't even talking about the governor of Virginia.
Well, then let me put my legal hat on for just a moment. If the governor resigns, then the lieutenant governor, who's in the midst of his sex scandal, steps in and takes over for the governor. The governor is making it clear he has no indication or desire to leave. He ain't leaving.
He's not leaving.
And the Republicans that control the House and the Senate are saying, we're not impeaching him.
Because it's not an
impeachable offense.
And it's a PR disaster for him. Every day he stays as governor, it's a PR disaster.
And the divide it's creating among the black base voters of the Democratic Party in Virginia and the majority white population in the Democratic Party in Virginia, that just plays right into the hands of the Republicans anyway. So the old method of Sun Tzu, the Chinese military strategist, if your enemy's destroying themselves, just sit back and let it happen. And I think that's the tack Republicans have taken. If the governor resigns, obviously the lieutenant governor would step in and Fairfax would move up. He would serve the remaining 3 years of this term and would still have the ability to run for a full 4-year term as governor. So if he moves up, you have what is being claimed in this sex scandal, a rapist in the governor's mansion.
Alleged.
If he steps aside, then the governor, who's the alleged racist, picks a replacement for the lieutenant governor and puts it through. If the attorney general is forced to resign because of the, first of all, he told the governor he had to resign for doing the exact same thing now that we've discovered
the lieutenant governor
has done. If he resigns, the legislature combined, the state house and the state senate, elects a replacement. The Republicans have a 2-seat majority in the Senate, 1 in the House. So Republicans would elect, presumably, a Republican attorney general. And Republicans have held the attorney general's office since, you know, for the last 20 years. So it would put Republicans back with another statewide office and somebody with a potential launching pad to run for governor in 21. And all this plays into the 2020 election because chaos on the left certainly helps Republicans like Donald Trump have a better chance of winning Virginia and carrying those electoral votes back into the red column.
And Doug, President Trump beat Hillary Clinton by only lost Hillary Clinton by 5 points in 2016. Do you think, Doug, that all this chaos with the Democrats could bring those 5 points back to Donald Trump in 2020 in Virginia?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question, actually. I really don't know. I know that the Republican strongholds are, you know, Shenandoah Valley, really from Roanoke on down. So I don't know. I mean, it may motivate them. That's what it would take, right, Steve? That you'd have to have the great motivations. This pro-life issue or this comment the governor made to me may be more significant than, you know, whether he wore blackface back when he was in college, because that can motivate people.
Perhaps the most likely result of this current chaos is that Fairfax, again, the only guy, the lieutenant governor, the black lieutenant governor, if he moves out of office, do black voters in Virginia go, wait a minute, the brother's gone, why are the two white racists still there? Does
exactly.
that create a political divide that Republicans can and should exploit? We'll talk more about it as the Battleground State Report continues at battlegroundstatenews.com, and we'll be right back.
State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
I think the scream in that entry music was the collective soul of the Democratic Party in Virginia expressing their frustration and outrage. Again, in the midst of all these scandals in Virginia, you have a congressman, Bobby Scott, Democrat from Virginia, African-American, admitting that he was aware of the sexual assault allegation against the black Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax a year ago. So there are some, if not contemporaneous, at least other indications she was telling people this story long before you got into this situation. And unlike the Kavanaugh hearings where they were trotting out people who were easily disclaimed and revealed as liars, they all had a political motivation. They were all liberals, extremists, who were trying to bring down a conservative justice. In this case, the allegations of a sexual assault, really it's actually rape, by this lieutenant governor against the woman who's making the allegations, a professor, a woman with great credibility, who's very detailed in
her
story.
She's very detailed. She remembers more in this 2004 incident in very specific detail.
And she doesn't have a political agenda to play.
In contrast to Christine Blasey Ford, who, you know, had like a 3-year window, couldn't remember much of anything, and it took place, what, back 1970, 1980? Very long time ago. So
this all occurred supposedly in 2004 at the Democratic Convention in Boston.
The problem that she would have in this is there's no contemporaneous evidence other than the he said, she said from 2004. She did tell other people, but it was like a decade later. Now, people say that, you know, this is not uncommon for victims of sexual assault. I grant you that. I don't think any.
But there was no proof at the time. I mean, again, if she had called the police, it would have still been he said, she said.
Exactly.
So, rapists and sexual assaulters tend not to do it on camera in public view.
Exactly. Now, and so I think there's that. I don't think any prosecutor would bring charges against the lieutenant governor based upon this level of evidence. But in a way, it doesn't matter, right? Because the court is not a legal court. It's a court of public opinion. And I think the court of public opinion is about to say, gee, every Democrat in Virginia has some sort of really awful problem.
Well, and Doug, the point is that the Democrats have set the stage for this themselves. They were the ones who've been arguing, you have to believe the woman. If a woman says an accusation and a man says it isn't true, you have to believe the woman. The whole Me Too movement is this racial identity politics of you can't do anything worse than drop an N-word. You can't do anything worse than be accused of being a racist if you wear a red MAGA hat. Well, now you've got actual racist bigotry on display that people don't have to wonder whether they believe or not. They can see it with their own beady little eyes.
Yeah, you're right. I was going to say that the Democrats during this Kavanaugh hearing, especially the women like, Kamala Harris and others were saying that the accusation is serious enough that you have to, believe the person making the allegation. So you're kind of you're dealt with that. I think the Democrats, they find themselves in a really strange position here, because if the governor were to resign over the blackface thing, and then the lieutenant governor were to resign, then the attorney general, again, would resign over a blackface thing. I think you're looking at a Republican governor then, right? I mean, so they're not going to do that. They'll deal with this one way or the other rather than, go three resignations and have a Republican, right?
Well, and I think, again, that's the political likelihood. I think that Fairfax will be forced out. He's the only one that's been accused of a crime. I believe that the accuser is holding back more information, more details. There may be other women that come forward, like a Bill Cosby situation. The weight on him is heavier than on the other two, because his is the only set of circumstances that would constitute a crime. The political impact of that, if the black lieutenant governor is forced to resign and then the governor appoints – Does he appoint a black woman Republican? Does he appoint a black woman Democrat? Does he appoint a black Democrat? Does he appoint a Hispanic? Who he picks will create more furor in Virginia. And again, I think that divide and anger among black voters in Virginia, who would see a double standard where the racists keep their jobs and the brother gets booted, would create a huge rift.
The political problem there is huge for the Democrats. And I think they would risk alienating not only in Virginia black voters, but perhaps black voters in every battleground state and around the country.
I just wonder, does it carry over? Like both of you are suggesting, the issue about Trump losing to Hillary by 5 percentage votes. I keep thinking the Democrat candidate's going to be more likable than Hillary. Right.
And by the way,
so that makes it more difficult.
Doug, let me just stop. How could the Democrat candidate not be more likable than Hillary?
Elizabeth Warren, but other than that, I digress.
There's
I have
one,
no idea.
Now, you make a good point.
Yeah. But we're just getting to know the Democratic candidates and their policies. And when we see this green push by Ocasio-Cortez that wants to eliminate coal, I don't think that's going to play very well among the coal country in Southwest Virginia, wants to eliminate aircraft. You know, I think Dulles Airport and a few other places in Virginia might kind of have a problem with eliminating aircraft as a means of transportation. when you have this, demand that we impose new rules that require people to tear down their homes and buy all new refrigerators and everything else in the next 10 years, that we want to fully employ with taxpayer dollars the unwilling workers of America. I mean, the Democrats are taking a tack policy-wise that is just so far in a field from where America is and has been. And we haven't even touched yet on the State of the Union, where President Trump gave a very compelling speech that in the immediate flash polls afterwards of the people that had watched it had 72 to 79% approval, with even strong approval from Democrats and over 50% approval, 60% I think it was, among independents. Mm-hmm. His presentation was superb and even moved people on the issue of the border wall. The Democrats' appearance between the white-dressed women, their refusal to clap for, let's see, a young girl that overcame cancer, refusing to applaud American greatness, refusing to stand up for protecting born babies. The Democrats' display of who they are was despicable. Trump did a great job. I mean, it created a further divide, I think, of what the Democrats are going to have to justify moving forward.
Doug, how would you rate that State of the Union address by President Trump? Would you put it in the category of one of the best ever? Above average, average, below average? How would you rate it?
And Doug, well, not a huge fan of President Trump.
Yeah, well, I don't really rate him that way because, I think Donald Trump is much better off teleprompter than on. So you have the delivery issue. I think the speech was well received by the public. I think there's no question about that. The old cynical guy in me though is like, okay, yeah, we do this every year, no matter who the president is. We have unity. We kind of get together, we clap a little bit, but then we're back to business as usual the next day. I guess that's the way I look at it, because I tend to take these rather lightly when it comes to whatever content comes out of it, because not much really ever does come out of it, does it?
And yet the Rasmussen Report's polling, tracking polling, daily polling, has President Trump at or above where Barack Obama was at this same stage in his first term of office. So the Trump numbers, despite the just intense anti-Trump media that we've seen, he is sustaining and winning friends and influencing people. He's picking up some gains in the black voter population, in the Latino and Hispanic population. As we've talked before, this whole border wall dispute doesn't matter as much in what voters in California and New York think. It's how does it play in the Ohio and Michigan and Colorado and other battleground states. And you're starting to see some polling that some of the Democrat members of Congress in those types of districts are starting to say, hey, I'm going to have to break with Nancy because mm-hmm. I got to face voters in 2 years, and I'm not running in San Francisco.
Exactly. And by the time we have our next weekly Battleground State Report, we'll know if a budget deal has been struck with border wall money or not. Right now, I'm a little skeptical that will happen, but we'll see.
Well, and when you look at the poll numbers that came out of the State of the Union, Barack Obama didn't get big bumps out of his.
Mm-hmm.
If President Trump does, again, that changes the pressure points in this border wall battle and in these elections coming up in places like Virginia, where state House and state Senate candidates, again, the Democrats picked up about 15 seats in an anti-Trump effort fueled a lot by a Northern Virginia bureaucrat blue Democrats. But Republicans lost some of those swing districts because they didn't run well and didn't put the money in to win. If Republicans swing things back in Virginia, it may put it in play. We'll talk about some of the other states, some of the other impact for the 2020 election with the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com to find out more, and we will be right back.
Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett here with you for the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. That's battlegroundstatenews.com. You can find links to some of the stories that we're talking about in this weekend's edition. As we've been talking about the Democrats, not just shooting themselves in the foot in Virginia and beyond, but reloading and taking another few shots and reloading and continuing. Let's not discount the ability of Republicans to screw things up despite the advantages that seem to be handing to them. You've got the new governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, who is pushing ahead an effort to impose up to a 25-cent a gallon gas tax increase in the state of Ohio. Right. I can't think of a better way for Republicans to abandon their base, push voters away from them, than to start pushing major, massive tax increases.
Is he a Democrat?
He's the Republican.
He's a Republican
in name
governor.
Only, governor of Ohio.
Right, because I share the view. I think it was Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, that Republicans are put on earth to lower taxes. That's the reason they're here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that immediately gets me less motivated when I see one of my guys wanting to raise taxes.
So, Doug, among the clown car of Democratic presidential announced candidates and
yes.
potential candidates, do any of them set forth policies that appeal to voters in battleground states, and in particular the key Midwest battleground states of Ohio and Wisconsin, Michigan, and let's say Pennsylvania?
No, I don't think so. And I think, Steve would point this out. For example, Kamala Harris, while she definitely wears well, I think, when you really start looking into her policies, they're
what Willie Brown says, too.
Yeah. Well, maybe that'll play a role, too. I want to throw something in here, too, as we were talking about President Trump, because are we taking the opinion then that the Mueller investigation, all these Democrat House investigations won't drag on President Trump for re-election? I think all of us agree we don't think there's any Russian sort of issue with the election or anything like that. But do you think some of these business dealings they're looking into or something may come out of the Mueller investigation that might be a problem for him running for re-election?
Well, just late this week, you had members of the Senate investigative committee say that there's been nothing found in 2 years that would indicate any sort of the Russian collusion that instigated the Mueller investigation. We get more and more information that those that were involved in precipitating the investigation, the FISA warrants, were knowingly using information from the Clinton campaign team or funded by the Clinton campaign team and not disclosing it to the judge. So I think that the official investigation, I mean, Mueller's going to write a report, perhaps soon, that will criticize the president but not, create any legal jeopardy, any basis other than they've done a 2-year investigation and found nothing that actually ties to the alleged Russian collusion that simply didn't happen. Now the Democrats, even though they campaigned in the midterm saying that they weren't going to engage in the mindless and endless investigations, are doing exactly that. Now they're even wanting to investigate his business dealings long before he was president because he was doing hotels in places around the world, and somehow things that aren't a crime are going to be, tried to painted as criminal activities simply because doing business in foreign countries is deplorable, according to the Democrats. I don't think there's anything that will be found there. Will they create, smoke? Will they create hysteria mm-hmm. over mm-hmm. the
innuendo.
Allegations rather than the actual accusations and information? I think absolutely, but I think the American people are pretty much taking this is all just political gamesmanship. What is putting money into my pocket? What's letting me keep more money? Am I getting a better job? Am I keeping my job? Those economic realities, I think, are going to have a bigger impact than what some of the crazy Democrats in Washington are up to, including Ocasio-Cortez and some of the new crop that are, pushing crazier and crazier policy every
crazy
day.
Crazy stuff. By the way, Doug, you said something about Kamala Harris, that she wears well, and I think she does. I think you mentioned earlier that she's sort of the female Barack Obama, very photogenic, very articulate. She's far left, and I think that's where she falls down as a potential presidential candidate. I don't see her winning. I mean, I think it should be very hard for her to win any of these 17 battleground states. In contrast, I'll throw this out and see what you think. I think that there are one announced and one potential presidential contenders that could possibly win in these battleground states. One is Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who won in re-election in the Senate by 6 points, in part by pretending to support President Trump's tariff policies before the election and then changing his mind and being against them after the election. And then the other one, I think, is maybe Joe Biden. He's, born in Pennsylvania. He's kind of far left, but sort of, not as crazy as the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party.
I'd throw in Amy Klobuchar,
agree.
Who's going to be announcing this weekend from Minnesota, the senator from Minnesota. I think I'd throw her into the mix that, again, a lot of these people only appear reasonable because the rest of the Democratic Party has gone so far off the deep end of crazy.
Well, you know, Biden and Harris, a lot of people think that would be a ticket that Kamala Harris is really running to be VP. So, yeah, I could see that. I mean, and Biden's got, as you mentioned, the sort of political experience and all of the sort of gaffes or whatever you want to call it that Biden has said over the years. People have heard, they've laughed about, they've, you know, kind of moved on. They've seen him before. So, yeah, he's a known figure. So, yeah, that could play a role. But as far as the politics of it, I don't see any real winning political stance that or stances that the Democrats really have at this point. I mean, but that doesn't necessarily mean they won't win, right?
And let me say, I think, Steve, you raise a very good point that added to this, those two, Biden and Sherrod Brown, who could win battleground states. Amy Klobuchar is expected to announce for president in the next couple of days. She's from one of these battleground states in Minnesota. She's very popular there. She was reelected. Now, just a little twist on it. You know, you look at the senators who are out and have announced, and only one of them seems to have really made progress, and that's Kamala Harris. Elizabeth Warren keeps, you know, making mistakes and apologizing, and, you know, it's crazy. Now it comes out in 1986. She actually wrote down that she was an American Indian, even though at the time and never ever since has she ever presented any documentary evidence or even genetic evidence that supports that false claim. And she's not likable. She's like, you know, she's like fingernails on chalkboard. So she's not moving up in the polls. She was like fourth or fifth in Iowa. She's moving down. Senator Gillibrand is a better looking younger version of Hillary. So she's not going anywhere, and she's flip flopped on all sorts of issues. But I do think that Klobuchar might have the potential to move up because she can present herself as sort of middle of the road, but she's not quite as photogenic, shall we say.
And we haven't seen the opposition research kick in on her. I tend to believe that Kamala Harris may have been behind the revelation of this bar application in Texas that just chopped Elizabeth Warren off at the knees. Apparently, the Democrats are doing a much better job of opposition research than was done in Virginia in the failure of Republicans to find the textbook or yearbook backgrounds of Governor Northam. And now even in North Carolina, the Governor Cooper there, his college yearbook at the University of North Carolina just filled with lynch pictures and blackface pictures. So we haven't seen the effective opposition research start to play against some of these other candidates, and they're going to be chopping each other off like crazy, and the blood's going to flow like rivers as they start shooting at each other.
Well, the other piece of information, and to your point, and again, I would say this might have come from the Kamala Harris camp, I'm speculating here, is even before Senator Klobuchar of Minnesota announces in the next couple days, reports have come out in Huffington Post and other that she can't recruit anybody to work on her presidential campaign because she's such a mean, rotten, awful
boss.
She's
a mean girl.
She's a mean girl.
Well, and Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii, getting taken out right at the beginning by allegations that she is just a tool of the Russians. And yet the information that she was being supported by Russians came from the exact same group that was running the troll routine down in Alabama, helping Doug Jones.
Yeah.
Completely bogus facts and information from a political hack group that NBC just ran with the news without even checking the source. So, again, stuff is being thrown out on these people that is handicapping them before they can even get their legs under them.
So let's take a look at these key states. Minnesota, let's add Minnesota to it. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania.
I don't consider Hawaii, by the way, a battleground state, but I'm willing to go there for several visits just to see if it might move into battleground status.
But those five Midwest states, let's look at these three: Biden, Klobuchar, and Brown. Which one of them plays better there? Obviously, you would give Brown the advantage in Ohio, which has, 18 electoral college votes? And then you'd give Klobuchar the advantage in Minnesota. Biden's originally from Pennsylvania. But how do they play out? Who would win in the
battle? But do they lose other states like a Nevada or a Colorado because they don't have a particular appeal to those places? And I wouldn't say that just because somebody comes from a state, they carry that state. Al Gore famously lost Tennessee. Had he won Tennessee, the Hanging Chads in Florida would not have mattered.
But the problem was with Al Gore is that he had shifted his political positions so that he wasn't representing Tennessee values at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you could say that about Klobuchar in Minnesota.
But they haven't had to go through the primary yet, where they're going to have to cater to those liberal extremist whack jobs in the Democratic Party to get the nomination and then have to justify it when they face the general election.
They're going to have to stand next to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and say, oh, yeah, she's great. Yeah, she's great. And, of course, in Ohio, where you have coal mines, right? You have
some natural gas also.
That's not
and some
play
farting
well.
Cows. I mean, let's not forget those.
Now, you can say
they're going to be gone in 10 years.
You can say that because it's in an official government document.
Yeah, I'm completely changing my retirement accounts based on that we're only going to exist in 10 years. I mean, how much more money do you have to stash aside to survive?
Well, I think you and I do our best on to get rid of the cows for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? Every time you eat a steak, I guess we're getting rid of one of those cows that are causing global warming or whatever it is.
I'm going to go eat a couple this weekend part to fight global apocalypse.
Hey, Doug.
You feel better when you eat that hamburger now, right? No guilt.
Yeah, I got to get your take on this. I think actually the real motivators, the real power behind Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's green plan is those mean, evil people at Chick-fil-A.
And again, just to finish up on the Ocasio-Cortez business, when she did her announcement of her new Green Deal, even Nancy Pelosi dismissed it as calling it the Green Dream. I mean, you're starting to see a pushback by the Democratic establishment under Pelosi against Ocasio-Cortez. She didn't get appointed to the global warming summit. She is getting pushback because I think Democrats are starting to be done with her camera grabbing attention. And yet you're getting even more from the Rashida Tlaibs. You're getting more from the Ilhan Omars. I mean, they cannot restrain their whack jobs.
They can't,
and that's not going to play, I think, in these battleground states.
They can't keep their crazy under control.
It's a new brand of crazy that goes beyond anything we could have imagined. Hey, you have a great rest of the week. We will be back next week, same time, same place. In the meantime, go to battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com, and we'll keep you up to date. Have a great week.